Welcome to the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm Ben Anderson.
I'm Chandler Holtz.
As always, follow us on Twitter at KSLSports.com, really anywhere you get your social media, at KSL Sports. You can find me at Ben's Hoops. You can find Chandler at Chandler Holt KSL, and of course, read our coverage at KSLSports.com. We are recording this on Tuesday, March 12th. But 18 games left in the Utah Jazz season. Kind of a quiet week last week, but a very busy week ahead. We'll start with looking back at the last couple of games. We'll talk about some of the pieces of news from the Jazz this week. Kind of surprisingly busy, I guess, though nothing earth-shaking. The week ahead, and then we'll give out our Jazz grades and answer our mailbag questions. So let's start with the Jazz. Back-to-back losses to the Chicago Bulls and the Denver Nuggets, which actually I thought both were pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Only a two-game week. The loss to Chicago was just 2 points, 119 to 117. Bulls led by 10 going into the fourth. Jazz make it a two-point game, outscore the Bulls by 8 in that final quarter. Not a bad game. DeRozan had 29, Kobe White 25. John Collins and Colin Sexton lead with 25 and 24 for the Jazz. And then Denver, not as close of a game, specifically in the first half. The first half was terrible. Denver pulls out the 142 to 121 win. Jamal Murray had a crazy 37-point game. Keontae George had another great game with 29 points. Nuggets shot a ridiculous 66% from the floor and almost 60% from three.
We've kind of seen the true face of Bryce Sensabaugh. At least he's getting his most real opportunities over these last two games. He's playing quite a bit. He's been pushed into the starting lineup with all the injuries that the Jazz have. And I don't think he has been a disappointment. 31 minutes, he's averaging, 15.5 points a game, 7 rebounds, 2 assists. Probably would have a couple more assists, but the Jazz haven't shot particularly well. Of course, what's most intriguing is just his shot profile. He just takes shots from everywhere. He can make shots from everywhere. He actually didn't shoot the 3-point shot all that well. Just one, or I guess he made 2 out of 7 this week, so 28%. But we know he can make that shot. We knew he could do that coming out of Ohio State. It's all the other places he can get shots off, and it doesn't really matter who's guarding him. He can get to his spots and shoot over you, and maybe you can push him to a spot that you wouldn't consider his shot, and he'll still make it over you. So intriguing as a scorer whether or not he will actually get that opportunity, because there are a lot of scorers in the NBA, and as good as Bryce could be, he's probably never going to be as good as Lauri Markkanen. You know, and then Keontae George is naturally going to have the ball in his hands a lot because he's the future guard of the team. So where does Sensabaugh fit in as far as getting looks? That's going to be a big question going forward.
Something I've noticed about Bryce, it seemed like earlier in the season when he got the sort of garbage minutes at the end of the game, it seemed like he was sort of walking on eggshells when he was playing. He was trying to stay in the game and show that he can be a good defender and have good ball movement. But over the past 2 weeks, I'd say he's really been looking for his shot and he's looked confident.
Yeah, he's taking 10 a game. That's a lot of shots for a rookie. Now he's playing 31 minutes, so he's going to have to shoot, and the Jazz don't have a lot of offense. But that is a type of thing that if he can do, and the Jazz believe he can do it, you know, they're trying to figure out what their second unit's going to look like going forward. I don't know if Jordan Clarkson's still on the team next year. I don't know if Colin Sexton's still on the team next year. I expect Keontae George to be starting, and that maybe you push Colin Sexton to the second unit, or maybe he starts alongside Keontae George like he has been. But that gives an opportunity for the Jazz to need buckets off the bench, and maybe that's what Bryce Sensabaugh's specialty will be to start his NBA career, because I suspect he will get more real playing time to start the season next year. But some intrigue there. I think that was probably the storyline of the last week.
Since the trade deadline, the Jazz have played 12 games. They're 2-10 in that stretch. Keontae is averaging 16.2 and 5.5 assists, and his shooting splits are way better, 43% from the floor, almost 42% from three. Taylor Hendricks is putting up about 7 points and 6 rebounds in that same stretch, and Bryce Sensabaugh 6.7 and 2.2 rebounds. And like you said, though, in the past 2 games, his first 2 games as a starter, over 15 points on over 63% shooting.
Lauri Markkanen's the Jazz best player. I think Colin Sexton's probably safe to say right now is their second best player. I would still say that's probably the case. And over those last 12 games, again, the Jazz aren't winning, but Colin Sexton's averaging 21 points, 6 assists, 2.5 rebounds, but he's shooting unbelievably well, 48% from the floor, 47% from three, and he gets to the free throw line more than anyone on the team, more than 6 a game. I think after those two, Lauri and Colin, there's a real question of who the Jazz third best player is, and I'm probably leaning towards Keontae George.
I was just thinking that.
I think that's probably who it is. That's night in and night out. He feels a lot like what we saw in the summer league. He just kind of seems like he's figured it out. He kind of knows what to do. He's getting different shots than he was getting early in the year. He's getting like early layups. Like, he did not get easy shots ever over the first half of the season. Like, unless it was a random run out and he got a layup, he did not get easy shots in the half court, and he settled for a lot of threes. Now he's using his pacing, his timing coming off of screens. He's getting little left-handed shots. He hasn't made all of them. He's got to figure out how to, you know, convert more at the rim. But, like, he's getting those shots, which are, you know, could be for a guy of his size and his speed. You know, he's not as fast as Colin Sexton, but he could get 4 to 6 points a game by getting to the rim in the half court, which is not something he was doing at all to start the year. So that's a really good sign. And again, over his last 12 games, now he's only played 11 of them. He missed the game with the illness. But since the trade deadline, he's made 11 appearances. Most encouraging, 43% from the floor, 41% from three. So he's continuing to dish out the ball, 5.5 assists a game. But he's really shooting more efficiently, which was a huge problem early in the season.
Another thing for Keontae, earlier in the year, I would say he was sort of like a sore thumb on defense. Like, you'd always sort of point him out, and yeah, a lot of veteran guards were just getting him inside the paint. But he's also, I think he's been learning and making a lot of strides on that end recently as well. He looks like a lot more of a comfortable defender, and I would say if you're comfortable defending, then you're just going to make better decisions.
Absolutely. You're not thinking about it as much. You kind of just know what I'm supposed to be, what that rhythm is supposed to feel like, and it's probably a lot different than anything you did in college. If next year he can give you 16 points, 5.5 assists, 2.5 rebounds, and shoot 40% and 40%, you're going to take that. You know, I think, and that's if he does that for a full season next year, I would not rule out those numbers being higher. Maybe the shooting percentages are a little high. I don't know if he's going to shoot 41% from three from an entire season. But, I mean, he's taken 7 a game. So over his last, this would be about 80. He's 11 games at over 7 a game. He's about 80 attempts. He's shooting 41%. So really good. He's really knocking down shots at a high rate. If he can do that, man, he could really scratch 20 points per game next year. I know that seems like a jump from where he is this season, but my comp for him before the draft, he had a little Donovan Mitchell in him. He has a little Devin Booker. I thought he was a little more Devin Booker than he was Donovan Mitchell. Now, I didn't see him being a primary ball handler, which Devin Booker really hasn't done all that successfully. That's kind of when Phoenix has been at their worst. They kind of default to him being a point guard, and I think it's hurt them. Keontae George is a little bit more of a natural guard, and they're doing it early in his career as opposed to like thrusting it on him later. So maybe he doesn't get to 20 points per game, but Devin Booker made that jump his second year. He went to, I think, 14 points to 20 points his second season. I could really see Keontae doing that. He's poised for a breakout.
I also see a lot of Jamal Murray in him. I feel like Murray has a lot more of a mid-range game. I feel like Keontae's a lot of threes and getting to the basket, but just sort of that ISO can give you buckets and also run a good offense type of point guard.
But we're talking about, you know, two guys who are perennial all-stars. Jamal Murray, who right now is the best player in NBA history and ever to make an all-star team and is one of the great playoff performers of all time. It's not bad company to start seeing like where Keontae George is heading towards. I think that is the direction. I don't think he's headed towards the high usage, low efficiency, I'm just going to spam points just to get points. I don't think that's what he is. I think he's going to be a high-level scorer, a good distributor, a lead ball handler who's going to be in that conversation of top 10, top 15 guards in the NBA. And then it's up to him how much better he wants to get. But yeah, Jamal Murray's certainly been a comp that's been thrown around a lot. His second season, he went from 9 points per game or just under 10 points per game to 17 in his second year and was a full-time starter. So he could absolutely do that. Keontae's already a better distributor than he probably ever has been. Yeah. In all honesty, Jamal's at 6.5 assists per game this year, which is very good. But his first 5 years in the league, he never averaged above 5. And that's kind of already where Keontae is. So he's a natural ball handler.
Do you ever think Keontae will be a double-digit assist per game guy?
I don't think he's going to get the double-digit assist. That's just, it's hard to do. We don't see it that much in the NBA anymore. And kind of strangely enough, the guys who do it seem to be big guys. You know what I mean? Now, we do have Tyrese Halliburton, but like Jokic gets up to that level now. And, you know, even Embiid and Giannis are like 6 or 7 a game. Just kind of where the league is going. Sabonis averages a ton of assists. I don't know if he'll get to 10. I don't know if that's the type of offense the Jazz are going to run. But maybe. I mean, he's the best distributor the Jazz have had since Ricky Rubio. Like, I actually think he's kind of more, and I know Quinn Snyder's offense didn't generate assists. It's just not what they ran a whole lot to get a lot of assists for one guy. And Will Hardy's a little bit different than that, but I would have a hard time seeing double digits. But man, he's really good. He's a really good player already, and he will have plenty of double-digit assist games in his career.
Let's look ahead at the next week before we take the break. Tonight, the Jazz are going to host the Boston Celtics. The Celtics, after winning 11 straight, they're 2-2 in their last four, so maybe the Jazz can sneak out, but unlikely because the last game against the Celtics was a rough one. And then on Friday, the Atlanta Hawks come to town, and then over the weekend, two games against Minnesota on Saturday and Monday.
Big games for basically everybody. Boston Celtics have basically got the Eastern Conference locked up, so not a huge game for them. They are on the second night of a back-to-back. They haven't submitted their injury report, but it sounds like Drew Holiday and Kristaps are going to be out tonight. We will see. But, yeah, Atlanta, sneaky huge game for the Jazz. If Atlanta wins that game, Jazz probably get a lockup, having the top 10 odds of getting a lottery pick this year. We will see if they're able to hold on to it. I think that will be the plan. Obviously, that's the direction they're headed. Even if they were to randomly win this game, I think the Jazz are going to lose enough games down the stretch to still get that top 10 pick. But they could even go to 9, which is, I think, where they're sitting at right now, 9th in the standings. We can take a look at that coming up when we do our Jazz grades. But that really increases the likelihood that they hold on to that pick. So big game there, and then back-to-back games against the Timberwolves. Timberwolves are going to be very hungry for wins. They are trying to not fall too far in those top 4 seeds in the West. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll do our Jazz grades. We'll answer our mailbag as well. Stick around. More Jazz Notes coming up next. Welcome back to the Jazz Notes podcast. Before we get to our Jazz grades, let's hit a little bit of the news. A couple of interesting pieces for the Jazz. Otto Porter retires, was a Jazz man, certainly never really played. He suited up for one game randomly. But it was funny that he had the Jazz social media team unveil his retirement. He doesn't have social media, so he didn't have any way to tell anyone and, like, didn't even go the Woj route. So the Jazz announced it. Woj actually retweeted the Jazz, which was kind of funny. That's it's kind of backwards how they usually do it.
And then unofficial for Darius Bazley, but the Jazz did sign Kenneth Lofton Jr., and then sort of just have to clear up a roster spot to get Bazley in time.
Kenny Lofton was with the Stars today. Let me see if I can pull up the box score. He actually had a pretty good debut. Now, it's the Stars. It's not, you know, that big of a deal, nor is it all that telling of what that would look like as an NBA player. But in his first game today, they played an early game. Kenneth Lofton had 26 points, 7 rebounds, a couple of turnovers. Shot 10 of 21 from the floor. Not shy. He took more attempts. He's been on the Jazz for 45 minutes, and he took more shots than Isaiah Thomas today. So Isaiah Thomas, 8 of 20, did end up with, 34 points here? Wow. Big night for Isaiah Thomas. 7 of 13 from the three-point line. 7 rebounds, 5 assists. I'll be curious if he ends up getting a chance with some other team. I don't think it'll be with the Jazz. They've got so many guards already. It doesn't really make sense to bring Isaiah Thomas up, but he's playing well. He still has something. He has way more than I expected to have. He's really still kind of cooking out there. I kind of thought this would just be a, you know, victory lap. Still wants to play the game. He's serious. He's really playing hard out there. He's playing defense. It's been fun to watch. Jason Preston had 18 assists tonight for the Stars, or I guess this morning. So kind of a fun game. We'll see if Kenny Lofton gets any opportunity to play with the Jazz on their main roster. I'm not sure we're going to end up seeing Tavion Kinsey. He might get waived so the Jazz can sign Darius Bazley, or you just let Kinsey finished this 10-day deal and Bazley signs. What's interesting is the Jazz are giving these guys 3-year deals. You know, obviously they're fully non-guaranteed and they're going to have guarantee dates throughout, but a chance for these guys to make the roster next year. Bazley's always been a little bit intriguing to me.
Every time I see Kenny Lofton Jr., I think of the NBA record that he holds, which is in his first career start, he dropped 42. And that was last year near the end of the year. I don't think they were playing much competition, but always kind of a funny thing because he didn't really get that many minutes. He played just 24 games in the whole season and one start, but scored 42 points in that start.
Yeah, he's a bucket. He really is. Darius Bazley's a freak athlete. We know that. And kind of brings some size, and it's the type of guys who Danny Ainge had a little bit of success with drafting in the past. I'm thinking Aaron Nesmith, who's kind of broken out this year. Was he with the Pacers? He's kind of finally had his year. Danny Ainge drafted him in the lottery, I think, with the Celtics. And some guys just take a couple of years. You know, maybe Bazley can come back next year and put it together a little bit more. But if not, low-cost investment on some of these young guys who might have a little bit left in the tank that they weren't able to show early in their NBA careers. But, those are the types of players you sign. I think that's fine. Those are worthwhile gambles for the Utah Jazz. Any other pieces of news we missed?
Just one small thing. Like you said, the Celtics will probably not be at full strength tonight, and the Jazz will not be either. Lauri Markkanen and Hendricks remain out with their injuries.
We'll see how quickly they can come back. I don't think they're going to rush Hendricks back or Markkanen back, obviously, but a toe for Hendricks, sometimes those can really linger. You know, it's a hard thing to play on. Markkanen, if he doesn't play the rest of the year, I mean, that would be a bummer, but it's not like he's going to make All-NBA, so I'm not sure what they're pushing for, and let him be healthy going into the offseason and sign him. He will play again. I don't think we're going to have Markkanen completely shut down and not see him again this year, but I'm not sure if he's going to play. You know, there's 18 games left. Does he play 9? you could probably shut them down the last five games of the year at least, so yeah. You're already cutting that in half. All right, let's do our Jazz grades really quickly. Only a couple of games to base this on. We look at the veterans, the young players, the standings, and the fun factor. The veterans, Colin Sexton, as we mentioned, though Lowry Markkanen has not played, Colin's probably been their best player.
Yeah, definitely. And then against the Bulls, John Collins had a pretty good week. He puts up 19-7 on 70% shooting against the Nuggets as well. Again, veterans are how you win games, and you didn't win any games this
yeah,
week.
Right.
Maybe like a C+.
Yeah, Jordan Clarkson's been okay. He's passing the ball well, again, as he always does, but has had some lapses again. So good Colin Sexton, decent John Collins, kind of average Jordan Clarkson, and no other veterans are playing. That's what's crazy. There's not really a lot of other guys out there. So yeah, that's fine with me. C+, I think that's about standard.
Now the young guys. Bryce Sensabaugh had best week of his NBA career.
He got his first start and posted a double-double, and then he beat his career high in the first half,
yep.
Right? Playing against the Nuggets. He actually played pretty well there and gave the Jazz a little bit of a spark. Walker Kessler only appeared in one game, 24 minutes, 6 points, didn't shoot well, had the very tough job of defending Nikola Jokic, but was pretty underwhelming. Again, it's just not been a good second year for Walker. I think when we get to the end of the season, we start looking back at, you know, player grades overall. Walker's second season is not going to get as high a grade as I think a lot of us expected, myself included.
Yeah, and then Keontae George didn't play against the Bulls, but comes back against the Nuggets and has a great game. 5-for-8 from 3, 10-for-17 from the floor, 29 points. Definitely a higher grade than the veterans with Bryce and Keontae's one game, but not that much higher. Maybe B- or a B.
Yeah, I'd say a B. I think a B. You get to see a lot of Bryce Sensabaugh, which is exciting, and Keontae is a killer. He's taking that next step. He's getting there. It's pretty interesting to watch. I always like watching young players kind of figure it out. None of the other guys have really done a whole lot. You know, haven't seen much from Samanich, and even when he's played, he hasn't played all that well. So, I'll give it for the two first-round picks, Bs.
Next standings. Jazz are currently 12th in the West with a record of 28-36. They're one game back from the 11th seed and about 6.5 games from the 13th seed. Looks like the Jazz may be locked into 12th in the West.
Pretty entrenched there. Again, some big games against the Rockets before the end of the year. We'll see how much Alperen Şengün plays. He avoided major injury. It looked really scary. But Jazz play the Rockets, I think, still 3 times before the end of the year. So those are going to have huge impacts on the final standings. Jazz do have the 9th worst record in the NBA. That means right now they would have the 9th best odds of winning the lottery. They'd also have like a 97% chance of keeping their pick. If that falls to 10th, like let's say the Rockets overtake them, the Rockets have the 10th worst record in the NBA. If the Jazz were to sit at 10th, they'd have only an 80% chance of keeping it, which is still high. You don't see a lot of teams 11 through 14 move up into the top four, but 97% versus 1-5 is pretty significant.
Yep.
So we will see how the Jazz approach this the rest of the way. I don't anticipate them losing a lot of games. They are only 2.5 games ahead of the Brooklyn Nets, and Brooklyn, I don't think, owns their own pick, so they kind of are happy to win games, and they crushed the Cavs the other night in Cleveland. So maybe Brooklyn does overtake the Jazz, and the Jazz could get up as high as potentially 8th, but they are not going to catch the Toronto Raptors. Raptors are trying to lose games, and they have 5 fewer wins than the Jazz. They won't make that up over the final 18 games of the season. So Jazz could still probably pass the Hawks and fall to 11th and convey the pick. They could probably move up as high as 8. I would say it's more likely they go to 8 than fall to 11.
My question is, are we given good grades for losing games now?
Yeah, I think you got to lose games.
Okay.
I think
yeah.
That's what they're trying to do. You don't want to convey the 11th pick. That's the highest pick you could possibly get. So, yeah, I guess you get a good grade for losing games. So, A+ for the Utah Jazz. 0-2 over the last week.
All right, and then fun factor. I mean, losses are never fun, as all basketball fans know, but there were some fun moments for sure.
Bulls game was fun.
Yeah,
that was
definitely
a great game. You didn't have Keontae George or Taylor Hendricks out there, and I think that's what a lot of people are watching for at this point, but Bryce Sensabaugh was really good, and they had an opportunity to win it at the buzzer, and they missed. Again, it was kind of the perfect scenario. Play important minutes, get Bryce Sensabaugh on the floor in some of those important minutes, and then help your standings. It's kind of the right situation for the Jazz. It's weird that that's how we talk about the NBA, but it's true. The Denver game was atrocious, except for the third quarter, which again you saw Keontae George and Bryce Sensabaugh kind of just like take over.
Yeah,
the Jazz outscored Denver 42-30 or 42-22. Jazz were down big. Denver let off the gas a little bit, but the Jazz were down 14, and all of a sudden they had to bring Jokic back late in the fourth quarter. So that was exciting. So I'll give it a B-. That wasn't like
good.
An F of a week. One game was really fun. One game was bad, but even it had its highlights. So yeah, I'll give it a B-.
All right, you want to get into the mailbag?
Let's do it. I don't think we got a lot of questions today.
Yeah, we just have one from Cam Young. Do you anticipate the Jazz to use all three draft picks again this year, or consolidate for a trade-up scenario and use them to trade for a starter-level player?
Yeah, so this is where the Jazz are right now. They have the would have the ninth pick if everything just ended. They'd have the ninth pick. They would have something like, what, the 28th pick? Something like that, 29th pick. And then the 31st pick, because I think the Pistons won last night, so they passed again the Wizards in the standings. So the Wizards would have the first pick in the second round. It was a good spot to be in for the Jazz.
Yeah.
I do not see the Jazz taking three more rookies. Like, they already have a hard time getting Bryce Sensabaugh on the floor. So I don't see them adding three more to that group. So, yeah, I think they will consolidate them. Now, what does that mean? Consolidate for a trade? Does that mean they draft one guy in the top 10, which I think is probably pretty realistic, and then package the other two to try and get a player? Or even just kick the can down the road and say, hey, you can always use more draft picks. So some team at the end of the first round this year says, hey, there's a guy who slipped. We want him on a cheap contract. We don't have a first-round pick, but we have one next year. We will trade you a top 20 protected pick next year for a pick this year. And the Jazz say, well, that's a 4% better value than the 28th pick this season. We'll take it. I could see that happening for sure. And then the Jazz would have three picks next year again, assuming they convey their pick to Oklahoma City, but they would start getting to the point where they have the Cavaliers and the Timberwolves picks. So we're getting to that point as well. No, I don't see the Jazz making three first round, yeah, or three picks, or three picks in the top 35. And then again, it's important to remember, like, the package that the Pacers gave up to get Pascal Siakam was three firsts in this year's draft, none of them top 10. Bruce Brown, who's fine. Like, he was really good on Denver last year. He didn't really make a whole lot of sense for the Pacers this year. Just kind of an expiring contract. So, like, you know, is that John Collins and three first-round picks for, like, a player like Pascal Siakam? I think the Jazz would probably consider that. So I think they're going to be aggressive with those picks, trying to bring in some help.
What do you think the Jazz would target? If they have a pick in the 20s and then the 31st pick, would you think they just trade those for maybe another rotation player or throw a player in to try and make an upgrade?
I honestly think they would almost trade those for future draft picks.
Okay.
I think if you're going to really make a splash, your top 10 pick is how you're going to make a splash.
Yep.
But I think even then at that point, like, are the Jazz going to cut corners? I think Danny Ainge might be happy to say, give me another 6'8" to 6'11" guy, which you can't draft in the late 20s usually. Like, the big guys go early. Like, the guys with good size for their position go early, and that's why they get drafted where they are. And the Jazz say, add one more to that group. Cody Williams, whoever it is, you know, whoever ends up being in that spot, take them. And then, yeah, you could package those two picks and move it for 23 and then trade 23 for a future first-round pick next year. That's a better pick. Like, they have a lot of options. So I would be stunned if they made all three of them. But I said that last year, and they ended up making all three picks. So that was surprising. I don't think they'll do it back-to-back seasons.
Thank you guys for tuning into the Jazz Notes podcast. Got a busy four-game week after a short two-game week. Make sure to follow us on all socials at KSL Sports.
Yep, we'll talk to you again next week.